Good morning, everybody. We'll be in chapter 22 of Proverbs this morning. Again, it's just a teaching. It's a roadmap. It's not a book of poetry as being taught by the religious system, but it's a book of wisdom to teach us how to live our lives. And this is just a continuing saga of how we should live our lives. And it's continued throughout the whole 31 chapters. So we'll go back and I'll read this first and we'll go back and break it down. Okay, verse 1, it says, "A good name is rather to be chosen than great riches, and loving favor rather than silver and gold. The rich and the poor meet together. The Lord is maker of them all. The prudent man foresees evil and hides himself, but the simple pass on and are punished. By humility and the fear of the Lord are riches and honor and life. Thorns and snares are in the way of the froward, but he that does keep his soul shall be far from them. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old he will not depart from it. The rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is a servant to the lender. He that sows iniquity shall reap vanity, and the rod of his anger shall fail. He that has a bountiful eye shall be blessed because he gives of his bread to the poor. Cast out the scorner and contention shall go out. Yea, strife and reproach shall cease. He that loveth pureness of heart, for the grace of his lips the king shall be his friend. The eyes of the Lord preserve knowledge, and he overthrows the words of the transgressor. The slothful man says, there is a lion without, I shall be slain in the streets. The mouth of a strange woman is a deep pit, he that is abhorred of the Lord shall fall therein. Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. He that oppresses the poor to increase his riches, and he that gives to the rich shall surely come to want. Bow down your ear and hear the words of the wise, and apply your heart to my knowledge. For it is a pleasant thing if you shall keep them within you, they shall withal be fitted in thy lips. That thy trust may be in the Lord, I have made known to you this day, even thee. Have I not written to you excellent things in counsels of knowledge? That I might make you know the certainty of the words of truth, that you mightest answer the words of the truth to them that send to you. Rob not the poor because he is poor, neither oppress the afflicted in the gate. For the Lord will plead their cause and spoil the soul of those that spoil them. Make no friendship with an angry man, and with a furious man you shall not go, lest you learn his ways and get a snare to your soul. Be not thou one of them that strike hands, or of them that are a surety for debt. If you have nothing to pay, why should he take away your bed from under you? Remove not the ancient landmark which thy fathers have set. Seest thou a man diligent in his business? He shall stand before kings. He shall not stand before mean men." Now let's go back and see what it says. Okay? Verse 1 again. A good name. What's the word name? Hebrew word shame. It's number 8034. And it means the honor, the authority, and the character. Okay, so a good thing spoke about you, the honor, authority, and character is rather to be chosen, and the word rather shouldn't be there, is to be chosen than great wealth. And not the word loving, but the word loving should be good. And good favor is rather than silver and gold. So let me read it the way it should say. A good name is to be chosen over great riches or wealth. And good favor should be chosen over rather than silver and gold. Excuse me. So it's about the character and nature, isn't it? It's not about possessions. It's about what you possess inside of you, not external. Verse 2, the rich and the poor meet together. The Lord is the maker of them all. Now, do we really think we're talking about people living in poverty out under the bridges versus the people living in the penthouses?
No.
See, rich and poor, the Lord is maker of them all. He used that analogy to tell you whether you have the treasures of God or not, He's still your maker, isn't he? It's not talking about a natural thing. We're talking about spiritual things. So we have to realize whether someone has the wealth of God and riches in them or not, or are aware of it, doesn't make any difference. God's still our maker, isn't he? He's still our Father. He's sovereign over all, and he created them for their reason. With or without, he created them for their reasons. For his reasons, right? A prudent man. The word prudent means wise. So a wise man not foresees, but sees the evil and hides himself. What he's saying, he avoids the evil, okay? If I see something going on, I don't need to stick my nose in it when I see it's not of God. The temptation's there, but I don't need to be involved in it. There's no benefit for me to be in it. I'm staying away from it. But the simple, and the word simple literally means naive, gullible, or deceived. There's people that's very naive, they're very gullible, and they're very deceivable, and they walk into all kinds of traps. You have to watch the people of the world are very serpentine in nature. Do you understand what I mean? Mm-hmm. They're very wily. They'll try to take advantage of you, look you in the face and tell you how good they're being to you, and rob you in the same process. And we're talking about buying furniture, buying cars, buying anything. People will do that. Anything to get your money. They're taking advantage of you.
Manipulative.
Very manipulative. And they look you right in the face and say, oh, I wouldn't do that. But they're doing it at the very moment they're saying they wouldn't. It says, but the simple, the naive, the gullible seed, they pass on right on by that evil or whatever's going on, and they are punished or deceived, aren't they? They're gullible, they're taken advantage of. Verse 4 is a beautiful verse. It says, by humility, okay? Or what it should say is the reward of. I don't know where you got the word by. It should be the reward of humility and the fear or the reverence of the Lord are wealth and honor and life. See, when you, the reward of being humble and having reverence of the Lord are wealth, honor, and life. Makes it very simple, doesn't it? When you realize that the reward of being humble and reverencing God brings wealth, honor, and life. And who doesn't desire that? And all it takes is just all it is humility and reverence of God. Like that's some easy thing to do for humanity. It's not, is it? It's hard for humanity to submit to someone or something that they don't even recognize.
They're arrogant.
Oh, humanity is very arrogant. Verse 5, it goes on to say, thorns and snares are in the way of the froward. Let me stop there. Thorns represent what? Curses. We can go back to the Garden of Eden when Adam did this thing, and he said, cursed is the ground, and it'll bring forth briars and thorns. See? Symbolic of that. That's the law of first mentions. When Jesus was being crucified, what did he place on his head?
Thorn.
They were trying to curse that thought process of God. Trying to stop that mind of Christ. Okay. But those curses and snares are in the lifestyle. The word way should be lifestyle of the perverse.
Okay.
Okay. So curses and snares are in the lifestyle of the perverse. And he that does guard himself, not keep his soul, but guard himself, shall be far from them. So if I guard myself, I'm going to be far from the curses and the snares of a lifestyle. If I keep away from them things like he's talking about avoiding them, how could they get me? It's when you pick up that snake and play with it that he bites you. Verse 6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he'll not depart from it. Let me read it to you what it should say. Discipline a child in the course of life he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Look at the world over there, the Muslim world today. They train up their children to hate American people, right? Do they do it? Do they ever depart from it? No. Whatever you train up a child, just like this Miss America pageant thing that just went on recently, where the woman, a homosexual, was sitting, and there was actually two judges on the panel, was homosexuals and or lesbians, and this homosexual guy asked her, what do you think about the gay and lesbian marriages? And she said, I think a marriage should be between a man and a woman. Period. That's the way I was raised, and that's what I believe. Now, he asked her a question, and she did not answer it the way he wanted her to answer, but she answered the way she believed, which she has a right to do as Americans in this country. We have a right to our own opinion, even if it's ridiculous. And she was persecuted because she said she believed it that way. And it was totally wrong, but I give her kudos. And I think her career will be better because she stood up against it than if she'd have caved in and said, well, I think it's okay if that's really what you want to do.
Sugarcoat it.
Yeah. And she didn't get the crown, but you know what? She's got an awful lot of recognition because she stood up and wouldn't back down from it. And I applaud her for that. I don't think, even if you're wrong, if that's your opinion, stay with it. If I don't care. I'm not going to try to make somebody say what I want him to say.
Well, he's no better trying to force her to believe the way he believes. I mean,
yeah.
Everybody's got a different opinion.
Yeah. And he said, but see, society is going now, you've got to believe the way we are. We're the minority. You've got to go with us. I'm sorry.
Should be remembered more for that.
Sure she will, if she don't want it.
She got the crown for the pageant, whatever.
Yeah, and it didn't mean anything anyway, but she made a good stand. I appreciate her boldness to stand up and do what it is. And you know, she was trained up as a child that this is the way it was, and she's not going to depart from it. She said, no, that's the way I see it, is the way it'll be. And I appreciate that. It's a principle, see? And I like people that stand in principle for things. Shows me they're thinking. The rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is a servant or a slave to the lender. We can take that in the natural. The rich people control everything in this world, don't they? And the borrower is a slave to the lender. And we go to work to pay our bills, don't we? That's just the way society's set up today. And as long as you can make your payments, I don't care. Do you? As long as I can cover them, I'm not worried about it. Because this life is just here to mature us and grow us up. So that's just something to help us get through the food process, the bills, and all that stuff. It's just teaching us character. I don't have any problem with it. And I know we're not taking anything from this world with us when we go. It's going to stay right here. I'm not worried about it. But you can take this to the spiritual side. Okay? The rich rules over the poor. What's Proverbs 25:2? A wise servant shall have rule over a son who calls a shame. 17:2. A wise servant shall have rule over his sons that cause shame, and he'll have part of the inheritance among the brethren. Isn't that what that says? Basically? Same thing.
Back on verse 6, you mm-hmm. know, when you train them up the way they'll go, they'll not be a lemming. It won't be one that's a lemming. Follows them and falls right off the cliff.
No, they'll think.
They'll think for themselves. Just and lady in the
sure, she was thinking for herself. She wasn't asked, what do you think I would like to hear? She said, what do you think?
Mm-hmm.
See, and yet he tried to hold her to a standard he did not require. And he was the one in error in the whole thing. He's the one that looked like a dummy. He is the dummy, so we'll let it go at that. Okay. Verse 8, he that sows iniquity, and the word iniquity is actually the word evil. He that sows evil shall reap trouble, not vanity, but trouble. In fact, the word evil in the Hebrew is E-V-E-L. We spell it E-V-I-L in the English. It's 5766 in the Strong's, if anyone wants to look at it. But it says, he that sows evil shall reap trouble, and the rod of his anger shall fail. You know, a lot of people think by being angry they can accomplish something. They can get their point across. They can smoke somebody. They can bluff somebody. But God says it'll fail you. Eventually it'll bite you. Verse 9. He that has a bountiful eye shall be blessed. And literally it says good. He that has a good eye shall be blessed. Because he gives of his food to the poor. That means you're not thinking about yourself all the time. You're living in the we and us world instead of the I, me, and mine world. And these are principles that we need to live every day. I help people. I like helping people in all aspects of my life. As a teacher, I'm not just a teacher in teaching the scriptures. In everything that I do, I've always desired to help people. That same adage, the old adage about give a man a fish and feed him for a day, teach him how to fish, you feed him for a lifetime. As I do things, and I mean all kinds of things, if I'm working in the yard, if I'm working on my boat, if I'm working on this or that, or if I'm fishing, I'm always trying to help somebody find a better way, an easier way for them to do something. Maybe they're struggling with something. I say, you know, if you think about what you're doing right there and do it this way, it may be better. Some people get offended at it, but I can't help it. That's my nature. I'm going to try to help people. And I know that if you volunteer people things that they didn't ask for, sometimes it's called meddling. I'm not trying to meddle, but I'm trying to help somebody. And it says a wise person will hear when they've been given instruction, but the arrogant people will be angry. They'll hate you for it. And that's okay. But I'm still going to give them the opportunity to have the knowledge they need to do what they need to do.
So that's just telling you the nature of where
sure.
they're at.
Absolutely. Just tells you where they're at. It's a way for you to expose something. It's for your benefit, not to hurt anybody, just so you can know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Verse 10. Drive out, not cast out, but drive out the arrogant, and contention shall go out. Yea, strife and disgrace shall cease. Now, do you really think we're talking about somebody that is arrogant, a person, or the arrogance out of our own life?
It's in your mind.
See, it's an internal thing. So if we can get rid of the arrogance, if you get rid of the arrogance, the contention shall go out. When you get rid of the arrogance, when true humility is in your life, how angry are you going to get? There's no more contention. There's nobody to fight when there's no arrogance, is there? One person by themselves can't fight. It takes two thought processes to be a contention, doesn't it? And strife and disgrace shall cease. If you're not fighting and fussing anymore, you'll never be disgraced, will you? That's where the disgrace comes from.
You're not eating from the tree of life.
From the tree of knowledge of good and evil, you're eating from the tree of life. You don't have those issues.
It's how you deal with each thing that matters.
Which thing?
Any circumstances, it's how you deal with those circumstances.
Right. It's your attitude in the test that directly correlates the longevity and severity of the test, right?
Yeah.
So if it's our attitude about the things that's happening, again, like I said in another place where I said, it's not something being done to you, but it's being done for you.
Yeah.
Now you've got the right attitude, and it won't lessen the fact that you had something done that affected your life. But how did it affect your life? Was it a negative, boo-hoo, wow, me, you know? Or did you realize, hey, God loves me enough to correct me and put me on that right course? And very few people look at it that way, do they? Most of them want to go, wow, look what they've done to me. But if you realize God sent that in your life to help correct you and get you back on course where you need to be. In the long run, I'll take it every day. You know, that's the one I want. I want the one that gets me where I need to be. Okay. Verse 11, right? He that loves pureness of the mind, not heart, the mind, and cross out for the grace, okay? And it should say this. He that loves pureness of the mind, on his lips, the pureness of the mind, and on his lips, the king shall be his friend. Excuse me, let me read it again. He that loves pureness of the mind, and grace on his lips, the king shall be his friend. If I love the purest of mind and have grace on my lips, the king's going to be my friend, right? Who do you think the king is?
The Christ.
Okay, he'd be my friend. That's all I'm concerned about. He's my friend. He's my father. He's my brother. Verse 12. The eyes of the Lord preserve knowledge. What are the eyes of the Lord? Remember, we said the seven eyes of the Lord, the seven spirits of the Lord. turn to and fro, seeing everything. But the eyes of the Spirit, so you can say the spirits of the Lord preserve knowledge. The Spirit of the Lord preserves knowledge, doesn't it? The Spirit of God in you preserves the knowledge. Didn't God write it in our minds before the foundation of the world? Is that true or false according to Scripture? He wrote in our heart or our minds before the foundation of the world. So the Spirit of the Lord is what preserves that knowledge in us. The Spirit of the Lord being in us preserves that knowledge, doesn't it? And He overthrows, and He is the Lord, and the Lord overthrows the words of the transgressor, or literally the unfaithful. See, when we think of transgressor, we think of bad people doing all kinds of bad things. And all God's talking about is, are you faithful to me or not? He said, you can't have two masters and serve them both, can you? You'll either love one and hate the other. You got to serve humanity or God, one way or the other. Okay, verse 13. The slothful or the lazy man says, there's a lion outside. Why is he saying that? First of all, he's lazy. He's finding an excuse not to go outside. And he's got fear. I said, first of all, it's the laziness. And he's using the fear. And when you start utilizing something, that playing that game of lying to yourself and making excuses to not do something, you're setting yourself up to fall in a trap, aren't you? You're setting yourself up to get in a trap. So the man is lazy, and he makes up an excuse to not go outside. And there was no lion outside, I'm sure.
There might be swine flu out there.
Yeah, it could be swine flu or Asian flu, the bird flu. Could be any number of things that's all over the world every day of life, isn't it? But when it gets in the media, oh, look out. He says, I shall be slain in the streets. 2 Timothy 1:7 says, God has not given us a spirit of fear, but power, love, and a sound heart or a sound mind.
Sound mind.
Sound mind. And we realize that this mind that He gave us is the mind of Christ. So I have no fear involved. If I have fear, did it come from God?
That's the preservation of the knowledge up in...
Well, sure it is.
Wow.
Absolutely.
That was in 2 Timothy
1:7.
1:7.
He said, I'll be slain in the streets. See, that was his excuse. And remember my saying from years ago, justifying is just a lying? He justified a reason not to go out there, manufactured it, and justified it in his own mind, and he just lied to himself.
Now, the lion's in.
Absolutely. It's not outside. It's inside. Verse 14. The mouth of a strange woman or the adulterer is a deep pit, and he that is abhorred of the Lord shall fall therein. And there it is. Right there is the answer to what happens to the guy from up above. He fell in the pit. He got in the trap, didn't he?
That's so good.
Yep. His emotional stuff.
He's a moral woman.
Yep. Foolishness is bound in the heart or the mind of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. Foolishness is bound in the mind of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. If we don't correct our children, do we love them? If God doesn't correct us, does He love us?
No.
Nope. So He's going to do it, because He said He loves us. He says He's going to correct or chastise or correct those He loves in Hebrews 8, I think it is, 13:8 or... Yeah, 13:8. He says he's going to chastise us or correct the ones He loves, and He said He loves us all, so what's that tell me? So you know, the church world takes that thing out of context and says He say He only loves certain ones of them, so He's only correct certain ones. No, He's going to correct everybody. 1 Corinthians 15:21, it says, Paul says, every man in his own order.
Yep.
So every man's got his time that God's going to do the correcting. That's what we have to realize. It's not our time. It's not our choice. It's God's choice about it. Verse 16. He that oppresses the poor to increase his riches, and God, the world's doing that every day. Everybody's taking advantage of this crisis in the country. And you'd think in the crisis of the country, everybody would be saying, let's find a way to scale back a little bit. But everybody is gouging for more and more and more. I just asked a gentleman to send me a couple little teeny light bulbs for my trolling motor. They're 24 volt. They look like a little 12 volt bulb you'd use, just a little marker on the side of your vehicle or something. But they're 24 volt. Put a 12 in and it blows because it's a 24 volt trolling motor. $3 a piece, and $4 to ship them. So they ended up costing $5 a piece for a little teeny bulb that you could buy the bulb as a 12 volt, just a little different size wire in it, and it wouldn't cost a penny difference, you know, to do it. And they charge, you can buy them for less than a buck a piece in town, but you pay $5 a piece because it's for something, for pleasure, for fishing. They're gouging. Look at the price. I saw milk when I was in South Carolina this last week that was $3.69 a gallon for a gallon of milk.
People's complaining about gas.
And gas is high at $2. They got the milk from the cow standing out in the yard, and they got the gasoline. They had to pump oil out of the ground, spend billions of dollars to get it, and ship it over here and go through pirates and everything else and get it over here and refine it into gasoline and put it into supplier distribution system and get it to the suppliers through the wholesalers to the retailers and pump it out and pay $2 a gallon for it. It's coming from halfway around the world, and they're complaining about $2, but pay $3.69 a gallon for that. I saw a list one time about the different things that we complain about because of the price of gasoline. Pepto-Bismol is like $178 a gallon. Pepto-Bismol. No one pays attention, because they, in some of these little tiny bottles of stuff that they sell, it's insane. I got a little bottle of oil for a reel one time to lubricate my reels, and it's supposed to be the best oil made. Well, and I didn't pay attention to the cost of it. I just bought the reel. I still got the bottle. I haven't used it all because it's so valuable. It's like gold or platinum or something, you know. Little tiny bottle. It's just a fraction of an ounce, and it cost $8. I didn't think of that, because this little tiny bottle of oil, you think, couldn't be a buck, you know. $8, just think. If you take this into a gallon, you're talking thousands of dollars for a gallon of oil. Come on. They're ripping us every way we go. There's no excuse for it. And they're not trying to help anything. They're raising prices on things instead of trying to lower it to keep the economy going. They're trying to get all they can get for themselves, that greed of humanity. It's amazing how wild it is. And they can justify it in their mind. It's okay. You know, we saw watermelons that were about the size of, they were bigger than a softball, little miniature watermelons down in South Carolina, about that big around. Yeah, like I said, it was bigger than a softball, but it wasn't big as a volleyball, nowhere near the size of a volleyball, wasn't even half the size of a volleyball. $5. Well, if you cut it in half, you know, there couldn't be 10 bites in the thing for $5. Insanity. And they all justify this thing. But that's the way of the world. I don't want to get on that and stay on that. That's something we could go all day, and it wouldn't accomplish the thing. It'd be an issue, wouldn't it? Okay, he that oppresses the poor to increase his riches, and he that gives to the rich shall surely come to poverty.
There you go.
It will.
$5.
There's that $5 watermelon. You're going to go broke. Don't worry. $8 bottle of oil for a 2/10 of an ounce. Oh, goodness. They don't even realize it. Verse 17. Bow down your ear and hear. Shama. Hear, okay? Hear with the intent, hear intelligently with the intent to respond to the words of the wise, and apply your mind, not your heart, to my knowledge. This is the Spirit of God speaking, isn't it? Verse 18, because it is a pleasant thing if you keep them. Them is the words and the knowledge from verse 17. They go together. Within you, they shall withal be fitted in your lips. So he's saying, if you keep them within you, what's going to happen?
You'll speak them.
Didn't Jesus say, from out of the abundance of the heart or the mind, the mouth speaks, right? Mm-hmm. So what's in your mind is what's going to come out. And that's the way it should be. And if it's not what it should be, if it's not the words of wisdom and it comes out, you should be also be wise enough to become aware of it and change it, shouldn't we?
Yes.
We should work on that. It's a process. Look at verse 19. He said, it's going to be fit in your lips that your trust, cross out the word may, because it's not there, that thy trust be in the Lord. The reason he put those words in you, and he wants you to keep them and protect them and guard them and speak them yourself, he said, so that your trust be in the Lord. I have made known to you this day, even yet, and even to you. The words "even to you" should say it this way: I have made known to you this day, yes, you. So if you have any doubt whether God's talking to you, what's that tell you? Yes, you. God's talking to you. When you hear me, God's talking to you. And verse 20 says, "Have not I written to you excellent things in counsels and knowledge?" Now let me redo this verse 20 because some of the words are not correct. It should say, "Have not I written to you excellent things?" And literally the word "excellent" should say this: threefold. Okay? Threefold version, threefold things. And it says threefold things. I have written to you in threefold. And two, the counsels there of plans, threefold plans and knowledge. Of threefold plans. Could that be maybe, I'm going to go out here on a limb, could that possibly be the dust covenant, the sand covenant, and the star covenant? Could it be the Passover, Pentecost, and Tabernacle Feast? Could it be Mount Moriah, Mount Zion, Ophel, Mount Ophel, Mount Moriah, and Mount Zion, rather? Excuse me, get them in the right order. Think possibly that's going to be? You think possibly that could be tied into what Jesus said in the first 2 days? I did miracles and cures, and the third day I'll be perfected. Do you think Job said in the first 2 days they hear nothing at all, but in the third day they get a hold of it? Do you think these patterns here about these threefold might have a key to our lives? I think it's a remote possibility. And I think if we look into it, we'll find out the answer, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
If you really want the truth, you'll get it. But be prepared to have your mind changed. Because when you tell God, "I want everything you got," you better figure your world is going to be turned upside down and emptied out. Because what you believe is not right, or there will be no need of these covenants, would there? The old covenant was done away with because it was a better one. That's the only reason. Thank God for it. Verse 21. After he does this thing of writing you in threefold plans and knowledge, in order that I, and cross out that word "might" there in verse 21, in order that I make you know the certainty, or literally the reality, of the words of truth. He said, "I wrote to him this way so you could know," not "might know," but "make," that I make you know this, the reality of the words of truth. God says, "I'm going to make sure, I'm going to do it this way to make absolutely sure that you know the reality of the truth, the words of truth. In order that you," and cross out the word "mightest" there again. That's an added word, it's not there, it's a doubt word anyway. "In order that you answer," what? "With word," not the words, but "with words of truth to them that send for you." So he said, "I'm equipping you." And he said, "If I equip you," what? Romans 8. "If I call you, I'll equip you. If I equip you, I'll glorify you."
Yeah.
Okay? So if he's preparing you here, so for the ones that send to you, you'll be able to give them the truth. Correct? That's what it's all about. So you can pass the truth to him. He said, "Rob not the poor because he is poor, neither oppress," and that word "oppress" means to bruise or crush, "the afflicted." And that word "afflicted" there literally means depressed in mind and or circumstances. Whether they're depressed in the mind or circumstances, don't crush them. Okay? Don't take advantage of them. In the gate. And the gate to them was what? It was the entrance into the city, but it was a gathering place for wisdom to be shared.
But the gate to your mind
is where it should be. Okay? It's all symbolism there. But are we not the city, holy city? Okay? So the gate into that is through the mind, through the wisdom. So you need to not really oppress the poor because of their circumstances in physical or mental condition. If it's a mental condition, it could be just total ignorance, couldn't it? Okay? And 90% of it is that way. Verse 23, because, the first word for should be because. Because the Lord will not plead their case, but he will defend their cause. God will defend them. Even from Genesis 1, he said he would protect them while they were in ignorance, didn't he? And he will spoil the soulish life, not soul, but the soulish life of those that spoiled them. Isn't that kind of reaping what you sowed? Galatians 6, verse 6, 7, 8. Okay? Verse 24, he says, now, here's another direction. Make no friendship with an angry man. Doesn't say you treat bad, angry people bad. It says, don't fellowship. It's telling you not to fellowship with them. And didn't Paul write in the New Covenant, in the New Testament, in Corinthians, that, I think it's worth, yeah, it's in 1 Corinthians, that not even to fellowship with unfaithful people, right? Because evil communications corrupts good lifestyle, right? It'll mess you up. He didn't say you will change them. He said they will get you. And until you're rock solid in who you are, hanging out with people of questionable character will get you in trouble. Once you know who you are, Jesus knew who he was, and nobody intimidated him, no one corrupted him, but he was mature. And when you come to that maturity in Christ, you can be with all of them. That's like he did. But until that point, you're going to be swayed by the emotions of your soul. So make no friendship with the angry man, and with a furious man you shall not go. And he's not talking about never talk to him. He's talking about hanging out, making them best buddies, you know, because eventually they'll do things to you. Verse 25, look what he says. Lest you learn his ways and get a snare to your soulish life. He'll get you going his direction, won't he? All you got to do is be around them a little while. Next thing you know, you'll be just like them. If you hang out with someone who's messing with drugs, what will you be called? A druggie. If you hang out with someone with the reputation of being a thief, what do you think you'll be called? How about somebody that's an alcoholic? You'll be drinking next. I've already been accused of that. Had some friends that have a garden, and they sit around their garden if they work all day, and they sit around and drink beer in the evenings, which I have no problem with that. That's their business. But one of the children went to the church and said, well, my grandpa's preacher sat and drank beer with him in the garden. I never drank a beer. I haven't had a beer in my hand for years and years and years, you know. Probably 30 years close to it. In fact, pretty close. This makes up 30 years since I've had a drink this year. Some later in the year, about New Year's, New Year's Eve. It was 30 years ago. It was the last time I had a drink. And you know what? Yet this child went and told his parents and the preacher and everybody. He didn't tell the parents. He told all the other people at the church that my grandpa's preacher drinking beer, drinks down in the garden, drinks beer. Well, when his dad heard it, his dad come and told us that, and I laughed, you know. I said, everybody knows I didn't drink any beer down here. He said, yeah, but that's what he told. I said, I don't care. I said, it was a child. He didn't know any better. He saw everybody drinking beer and just assumed that everybody did it. See, I said, perfect example. I got slammed for something I didn't do. I said, but that happens all the time. I don't pay attention to it. I know what I've done, and I know what's right or wrong. And if I was to drink a beer and someone see me, God would burn this place down, wouldn't they? I think it would be terrible. Okay, verse 26. Be not thou one of them that strike hands, or of them that are a security for debts. So don't be quick to jump in debt for somebody else, because you're going to pay for it, I guarantee you. He said, if you have nothing to pay, why should he take away your bed from under you? I want to read that out of the Living Bible, if you would give me grace just for a second to open this up. 22:27. Okay. This is, I'm going to read 26 and 27 both out of the Living Bible. Unless you have the extra cash on hand, don't countersign a note. Why risk everything on your own? They'll even take your bed. They'll take everything you got. You co-sign for somebody and they don't pay the bills. They're coming to you. That's what that name means. Remove not the ancient landmark which thy fathers have set. Is that what it really says? Do not move the ancient boundary marks, you know, that your father has set. Who set them?
Father.
Not Father's plural, but our Father set the landmarks. He set the boundaries, didn't he? And what I see in this is the cross. That's the mark. That's the mark in the land. Are we not made out of dirt? And I see the mark laid in the sand was the stripes that he took on that hill and going to that cross in his persecution. There's the marks that I don't ever want removed from the land. You see what I mean? I don't ever want to forget the fact that that cross was what changed our whole lives and gave us the possibility or the provision, is what I should say, the provision of living a godly life. It could never be done before that. So we never forget the cross. Verse 29. Do you see a man that is diligent or skillful in his business? He shall stand before kings. He shall not stand before what? Literally obscure or deficient in light. Men that are deficient in light. What would be a good word for that? How about ignorant? You'll never stand before obscure or people deficient in light. Or if you're deficient of light, would that not create ignorance? Darkness, ignorance, wouldn't it? So he says he's not going to stand before the ignorant, but he's going to stand before the king. Okay? He shall stand before the king, not kings. Not interested in that. See, they're making it natural. And I understand that God is spiritual. So the natural things that we see have to be transferred into the spirit realm, don't they? To be applied in our lives. And if we can't assimilate this in our lives, we're wasting our time. Any questions or comments?